Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
All right, excited about this conversation. Joining me in studio, former congressman, former gubernatorial candidate, also legislator here in the state of Arizona, Matt Salmon joins me. It's good to see you again.
Great to see you, Mike. Saw you last night, too.
Yeah, it was a fun event last night in Mesa. Last night I was the moderator of a forum for city council candidates and mayoral candidates in Mesa. And I learned a lot about Mesa last night.
It's a great place.
Yeah, it's a great city and a lot of really good.
Largest city in America.
Which I didn't realize until someone said it last night.
I grew up in Mesa, graduated from Mesa High, been there, raised my family there. My kids all graduated from Mountain View. It's a great place for families. Great place.
Yeah, it's a good.
We need to do a little bit more to bring some business, but it's a great place for families.
But there has been great advancements in Mesa. I want to get into our topic, but I want to tell you a story that you'll probably relate to. When I first moved here in 1995, I was an electrician, and I was a service electrician, so I was in a work truck all day. And I remember going out to East Mesa, going out to Gilbert, and it was hay fields, feedlots, and hand-painted signs that said lots for sale.
Right.
And I remember thinking to myself,
maybe I'll buy one of these.
No, the opposite. I was an idiot. Who would ever live out here?
Yeah. Yeah. Now it's going for what, $1 million?
Yeah. If I had bought 5 acres, I could retire.
Right. You could retire.
Yeah. So anyway, it's turned into a great city. The reason why I asked you to come in is, I learned a lot when I was in D.C. with you on that trip where you invited me to be your guest at the State of the Union address. We had dinner, and I remember you talking with a lot of members of the Freedom Caucus because you were a founding member, and a lot of people on opposite sides of the – I mean, it was really a cross-section of people that night. But the respect that people had for the Freedom Caucus because what it had turned into, it was a very powerful caucus, and what it was really focused on was spending.
Yeah, absolutely. It was about getting the federal budget back in order again.
Is that do you think that is still the focus of the Freedom Caucus?
Not at all. In fact, that's one of my big frustrations. And I've been kind of vocal. And that's not to say that there aren't a handful of members, a couple. In fact, Andy Biggs, to his credit, when Trump was blowing the door off spending, when he was president of the United States, Andy ended up voting against a lot of those budgets. But I just want to kind of walk down memory lane because, when I first got elected to the Congress in 1994, it was during the Contract with America. And one of the things that we promised to vote on and put before the American people was the balanced budget amendment, which I proudly co-sponsored. You know something, Mike? Hasn't been voted on since that time. I mean, in over 20 years, nobody's talking about the balanced budget amendment anymore. At least, nobody in office is talking about it. And when we started the Freedom Caucus, I know Rolling Stone hired one of their reporters to come out and do an expose on us. So he came out and spent, like a couple weeks with us. And the idea was to do a hatchet job. Well, it ended up being a puff piece because he said, no, these are the guys that are really the only ones back there focused on spending, which is killing us. And I've listened to your shows, Mike, over the last long time. And the fact that you won't let go of this like a bull terrier with a chew toy, the spending is the problem. And it's killing us as a nation.
Jimmy Carter, and when he debated Ronald Reagan, Reagan said in a debate with him, we don't have high inflation because the people are living too well. We have high inflation because the government is living too well. Yeah. How much do you attribute with your knowledge in Congress, how much do you attribute the spending and the deficit spending and the printing of money to connecting it to the inflation that won't seem to go any lower than where it is at 3.4?
I think it is the large portion of the problem. I wouldn't say it's the complete problem, but I'd say it's like maybe 90%. And that's substantial. The fact is, I mean, you would learn this in your first class in Economics 101, that when the government spends more than it takes in, and it prints money to basically pay off its debts, that's when hyperinflation takes place. And that's what we're seeing as a country. I know that there were some things during COVID that happened, with supply chains that wreaked some havoc on inflation. But this sustained inflation, it is a direct result of overspending and printing money, which they call quantitative easing. because they don't want people to know what they're really doing. And you said, you know, that Congress is printing that money. No, they're not. You know, Congress has delegated the responsibility for financial wherewithal to the Federal Reserve. I believe unconstitutionally so, because Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution, the enumerated powers, give Congress the authority for monetary policy. They dropkick that to the Federal Reserve, which is opaque. There is no transparency in the Federal Reserve and no accountability.
When you look at where we could cut spending, because if you look at the entitlement programs, Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, the projections are in less than 10 years, there's going to have to be a mandatory cut in Social Security benefits.
By 21%.
Yeah, 21%.
Right.
Where
that's
can we cut?
Ugly stuff. Look, Mike, and that's the problem. You know, the Freedom Caucus guys used to be concerned about fiscal spending. Now they're, you know, they're focused on not funding Ukraine. Well, that will solve less than, you know, a millionth of a percent of what we're spending at the federal level. The fact is that, you know, both candidates for president said that they're going to completely leave alone Medicare and Social Security. And the fact is, when you look at Medicare, Social Security, Medicaid, and debt service, the interest on the debt, it's like 75% of the federal budget. And the fact is, you can never, ever get to a balanced budget. By the way, I was part of balancing the budget back in the 90s, 3 years in a row. We actually did it with President Clinton, who came along kicking and screaming, but we actually balanced the budget. It can be done. There's a lot of stuff, Mike, and I know we're going to be talking, you know, over the next little while today. But, I mean, the fact that Congress in over 20 years has not been doing its job on regular order when it comes to passing the budget. They're not passing the 12 appropriation bills that they're required to do. They're basically drop kicking that responsibility because it's hard. And they are passing continuing resolutions and they are passing omnibus bills.
When you look at what's happened also within the Republican caucus as a whole, with the ousting of a speaker, with the threat of ousting this current speaker without, in my opinion, without a plan of who you're going to replace right. that speaker with, how much does that cause chaos within the entire body? And is that disruptive to any kind of a plan that they could have to rein in any of the spending?
It's very, very disruptive. I've been through a couple of deposing of speakers, and I'm not to say that there aren't times when that's necessary, but you know, you got to be doing the tough work too and demanding that the Congress gets back to actually doing its job.
But don't you think they have to have a plan of who they're going to replace?
Absolutely.
With?
Absolutely. And I think that you know, doing it twice in the same year is ridiculous. And it seems like the folks in my party that are kind of leading the charge on a lot of this stuff are more interested in theatrics then they're actually getting the real work done. And the fact is, we've got to get back to regular order. We have got to rein in spending. You cannot get there without dealing with entitlement spending. You cannot get there. And so you got to go back and be honest with the American people. Rip the Band-Aid off. Do what we got to do. Like you've said time and time again, it's unsustainable.
Yeah. And everybody's saying it.
The actuaries, by the way, they're not partisan. Yeah. They're agnostic when it comes to politics. They are saying that it is unsustainable and it is going. In fact, one of the leading generals said that the biggest threat to our national security is the spending.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yes,
it was
absolutely.
A few years ago, and he was right on. It is the biggest threat to our way of life. But everybody kind of goes along fat, dumb, and happy because it's not sexy, like, you know, build a wall or you know, whatever the case may be. But it is the single thing that if we don't get it under control, we're done.
Matt Salmon is joining me, former member of Congress, founding member of the Freedom Caucus. And in just a moment, we are going to have one more segment of a discussion with Congressman Salmon. We'll do that here momentarily.
The strong- strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
All right, having a great conversation with Congressman Matt Salmon. I guess you're still congressman. You know you're a former congressman, I think.
Nobody ever called me congressman, even when I was a congressman. That's true. Hey, you.
Yeah. I want to talk about, you mentioned national security, and I've reminded people before, I was just about 6 months too young to vote for Reagan for a second term. I turned 18 in June of 85.
Right.
And but I remember those years vividly, and winning the Cold War was an economic victory.
Very much so.
And are we in a position now, if we were to get into that kind of a Cold War with China or China and Russia, or that access that's coming together in that region, are we in a position where we could still do that in your mind?
I don't think so. In fact, when you think of the exorbitant federal debt that we have, close to a third of that's owed to China. Not a lot of people know that or understand that. And so it concerns me. I right now, we got to put the brakes on as fast as we can.
Do you think both parties at some point, do leaders in both parties have to look at what's happening and say, we've got to rein in the spending? Because it's not just a Republican issue.
No, it's not just a Republican issue. In fact, when you look at, you know, the spending, it's been, when it comes to spending over the last like 30, 40 years, actually one of the most frugal presidents was Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
And he did a kicking and screaming because we kind of forced him into it. We had a majority in the House and in the Senate, but we balanced the budget 3 years in a row. And so, you know, it can be done. But, you know, yeah, when I think about, you know, we balanced the budget in 2000 and I left in January of 2001. President Bush became president. Up starts going the deficit immediately again. So it was a Republican president. And during Trump's time, he had added close to $8 trillion to the federal debt, probably the most any president's done in American history in one term.
How much do you attribute that to the need for spending with COVID? Because that's what everybody talks about.
But COVID was the worst welfare program you can ever imagine. You know as well as I do that those PPP loans were a scam. And right now you're seeing with involvement from, you know, GAO, the fact that they are looking at those programs and they're finding literally hundreds of billions of dollars of fraud. And then on the $1,200 checks that they sent out to some people, you and I didn't get them, but many people got $1,200 checks during COVID to try to stimulate the economy. My dead mom, who'd been dead for 3 years, got a check. I just got to tell you, I think it was the worst kind of welfare imaginable.
What was the other option? Because with businesses being forced to close,
there should have been an executive order at the federal level that no businesses are going to close. He should have stepped in. You know, he put way too much credence in that goofball Fauci, who probably ought to be tried. You know, for what he did on gain of function in the Wuhan laboratory. But the fact is that so much was mismanaged during COVID.
So what happens in this election cycle? Because President Biden has promised that if he's reelected, the Trump tax cuts are going to expire.
That would be devastating.
OK. But then if you are concerned about the spending of former President Trump, do you believe in a second term of a Trump presidency that he would manage the spending better the second time around?
Look, when you look at, you know, the choice between him and Biden, it's like, you know, pick your poison. Look, Biden is a useful idiot. I don't think he's really calling the shots. I think that you've still got Obama calling the shots, the people from his administration, which are working for Biden. I'd like to be able to say, that Trump would go in and get control of things. But you know what? He's promised to take Social Security and Medicare off the table. And you cannot get there if you don't try to reform those two things.
Do you, Sue, who are the people in the Congress, in the House, who are the people in the House that are still, in your opinion, the same kind of fiscal hawks that the Freedom Caucus was founded on?
Well, two of my former colleagues from Arizona, I think, are really still fighting that fight. to their credit. One is Andy Biggs. I think Andy is a solid fiscal hawk. He's as smart as anybody I know. I mean, he's a former state Senate president. He understands the math. And the other one's David Schweiker. David's on the floor all the time, bringing the numbers to people's view, understanding that this is what we have to do in order to balance the federal budget. The problem is almost nobody else in Congress is talking about it.
When you look at that, when you look at them not talking about it, are they going to be forced to talk about it? Because Social
Security, when it's everlastingly too late. Probably dismays me more than just about anything is that we can, keep things moving with baling wire and chewing gum only for so long.
Right.
And finally, you have to address the real problem. Talking about the federal debt and balancing the budget don't seem to be motivating many people right now.
See, I liked this non-candidate, non-elected official, Matt Salmon, saying exactly what you think. This is the Matt that I've gotten to know off the air. And I really do appreciate the candor and the honesty, because it looks like the choices we have for president that Trump is going to be the better option for people in our position that think like us. But at the same time, the concerns are real from a lot of voters as well.
Well, and the fact is that, here we are, a country of 500 million people. And I long so much, for a Reagan type individual to step forward and be willing to lead our country again. We are in such bad need of somebody that is going to start talking truth to power and actually leading, like in Abraham Lincoln. You think about it, Mike, if Abraham Lincoln had done some polling with his political consultants to determine whether or not freeing the slaves was actually something that, was popular with the American people, he probably would have found maybe 8% of America supported something like that. And everybody else was vastly opposed, especially if we're going to have a mass war to get it done. But he led with a moral authority, and he did what he needed to do because he was a great leader. We haven't seen great leaders for a long, long, long time.
I appreciate the time today. As always, it's always great to talk to you.
Thanks, Mike.
That's Matt Salmon, former congressman. We'll be back here in just a couple of moments. Stick around.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Thanks for being here, and a big thank you to Matt Salmon for jumping in the studio with us. Coming up 1 hour from now, we are going to speak to Danny Seiden. He is the CEO of the Chamber of Commerce and Industry for the state of Arizona. We're going to talk with him about the possibility of this HCR 2060 being on the ballot, which you, the voters, will have an opportunity to vote on if it gets to there. It looks like it will. It just depends on some things. There's one holdout in Ken Bennett, and there was one of the senators was gone, a Republican senator's gone with a family emergency. So the vote's been postponed. But what would happen with this is passes through both chambers of the legislature. It goes on the ballot in November, and the voters in Arizona would have an opportunity to pass a law that, if it stands up in, it would mirror pretty closely the Texas law that's being challenged. One of the caveats would be, one of the conditions would be that the Texas law has to pass constitutional muster. Then this would go into effect as HCR 2060. And the voters would have a chance to say that Arizona law enforcement, under certain conditions, could enforce immigration law. So we're going to talk to Danny Seiden about it and the economic impact and whether or not he thinks that this is a good idea for Arizona. The reason why I'm a little frustrated with this entire situation is we've been put in a position, and this is part of my defense of Arizona that I've been making for a very, very long time, is that Arizona is in a no-win situation. We are overwhelming the state of Arizona. We are the fentanyl superhighway. The state of Arizona, the state we love, is the fentanyl superhighway. The vast majority of fentanyl busts that are happening their capturing of fentanyl is happening right here in the state of Arizona. So that's a big part of the problem. It's coming through the ports of entry. Americans are helping to import this, but it's coming through Mexico. We also know that the illegal immigration issue is crippling places in southern Arizona. We know that Senator Sinema and others are asking for billions of dollars to support migrants that are in the country. Things need to change. The federal government is not doing its job. So Arizona either has to continue to beg for money from the federal government, sit on its hands and just do the best it can, or it's trying to actually do something. Because here's the other side of this. If the state of Texas, if the law, if the SB4 in Texas withstands constitutional muster and the Supreme Court says that the state has the right, has the authority to pass laws like this, what you're going to see happen is, even though the Tucson sector of the border is the busiest sector of the southern border, it's going to get even busier because the cartels will reroute a lot of that traffic that is going into Texas right now through the Tucson sector in Arizona. So now we're caught between the rock and the hard place. If we don't pass a similar law, if we don't do that, then are we stuck? At the same time, we hear people say it's going to cripple our economy, it's going to do bad things, which is what we're going to talk to Danny Seiden about. Here's a headline. Border sheriffs see more load car drivers. Teens are paid to smuggle migrants. So if you're a parent or a grandparent, you need to listen to this. These are kids, some of them too young to drive. They don't have driver's licenses. But the cartels, as sophisticated as they are using social media apps. They're reaching out to young people. They're paying them large sums of money, thousands of dollars, to go down to the border where there is a car, where the keys are in the car or hidden near the car. They're loaded with drugs or loaded mostly with people. Sometimes, I guess, both these loaded cars. And they're told then to drive to a residence in the valley somewhere or wherever they're. And they're paid a lot of money to do this. Kids, you understand, a big part of parenting is protecting children from themselves sometimes. That kids do things that are dangerous to themselves. And as a parent, you just want to get them through those years where they're not thinking about the consequences until it's far too late. Many times these kids are taken into custody, but they're not prosecuted at all. There is no punishment. Sometimes they're not even taken into custody because they're so young. So there hasn't been a consequence for what they're doing, but there's going to have to be. Because this is very dangerous. You're seeing high speed chases. You're seeing wrecks. We're seeing a lot of bad things happening with this. So Arizona is kind of in that place where we're shrugging our shoulders. We are not racist, xenophobic people whatsoever. We are also kind, benevolent people when it comes to legal immigration. But illegal immigration is doing great damage to the state of Arizona. And something has to be done. If Texas law has been, it has been passed. If it stands up and the Supreme Court says it's legal, that it's constitutional, you are going to see much more traffic come through Arizona. The Yuma Regional Medical Center, all of those sheriff's departments in southern Arizona, all of the services for hungry people with food assistance, all of those things, you are going to see them come become much busier because we're going to have much more traffic through Arizona. So then are we forced to pass that kind of a law? It's a conversation that isn't as simple as it sounds. It's a conversation that has to be had. And we're going to have a conversation with somebody that has got his finger on the pulse of the economy of Arizona. It's Danny Seiden. We'll do that at 10:35. So I hope you can be here for that. In a moment, we're going to talk about schools. Read On Arizona is partnering to try to help pandemic loss of literacy. So we're going to talk about education in schools and how we are seeing an uptick in segregation of schools. How can that be fought? And what will be the fallout if we are not, if we don't stop that from happening? Come, we'll do that coming up here in just a couple of moments.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app. Living like a lover with a red iPhone. Looking like a tramp, like a video
man. Demolition woman, can I be your man? All right, Alanis Morissette, Joan Jett, and the Blackhearts are headed to Talking Stick Resort Amphitheater June 9th for the Triple Moon Tour. Limited tickets are still available, and you can head to the contest page at KTAR.com with your chance to win a pair. All right, this was an interesting read for me. Read On Arizona and partners provide youth reading education to support to fight pandemic literacy loss. This is one of those areas that's frustrating to me because I know people that disagree with me strongly, but we agree that we all want what's best in education because this is one of those things that runs out of time. And what I mean by that is kids continue to age and grow, obviously. And if we don't catch them at the right ages, if we are not, if you know, up until third grade, kids learn to read. After third grade, kids read to learn. If we are not preparing them to be good readers and like to read by third grade, we begin to lose a lot of them. We start talking about the expense of this world we live in, and it's something we all should know. But if I were a teacher, which should scare everyone, but if I were a teacher, if I had the ear of young people, I would be real with them about what it takes to survive in the real world and what it takes to thrive in the real world. What kind of a life do you want? Now, there are some people we know that they lay their lives out. This is what I wanted to be from a very young age. This is what I'm going to do with my life. And there are other people that figure it out as they go along. And I was one of those people that figured it out as I went along. And I was not a good student in high school, but I was a very good student when I was young. I had a really good grasp of reading and math. And both of them have helped me in my careers. I've had two careers in my life, one as an electrician and the other in this industry. If I were not able to read, I wouldn't have survived in either industry. I said yesterday when I talked about education, whether you're reading from a textbook or a spec book on a job in construction is about 2 or 3 inches thick usually, and it lays out the specifications on a job site. If you're an electrical contractor and you're bidding a job and you're not a good reader and you can't read through a spec book and you can't read through a contract, you're not going to be in business long. If you are working on a job site, if you are the foreman on a job site, which you aspire to in the trades, if you are not someone that is able to be a strong reader and guide the people that work for you and what's in the spec book with the materials you're required to use and the way you're required to build a project, you're going to fail. So don't think that when you see somebody that is wearing work clothes, when you go to lunch today, and there's someone in line in wherever you're at, if you're inside a restaurant somewhere, and there's a group of people sitting at a table, and they're obviously they're wearing jeans and work boots, that you think somehow they're not strong at the academics, you're probably wrong. If you're successful in your job in construction, you are one of those people that is successful in the classroom at some point. Maybe not at the college level, but you are a strong reader. You can pay attention to detail. You can retain what you read. All of those things are important. Now, obviously, the reading skills, if I didn't have them, no way I could do this. This job. Every single morning, we are in the office cramming for the show. We're reading very quickly. I've got to convey a thought. I've got to be able to do these things. Thank God for the teachers that had me when I was young. So when you have this happening in Arizona and across the country, and it wasn't good before learning loss tied to COVID, we are not focusing on the basic skills. Our public school system has gotten completely off track in what it's doing. And we, parents, we are on a timeline because your child at 5 years old, generally speaking, enters kindergarten. Most parents have their kids in preschool. You're getting kids ready for this process. But at 5 years old, they're in kindergarten. At 9 years old, they're in the third grade. If in those formative years, you haven't created a good reader, then their hands, at least one hand is tied behind their back for the rest of their life until they catch up. So this timeline, this is not something we can wait for. This is not something that is going to come around slowly. We have got to jump on this. This should be one of the big problems that we want to solve, need to solve, are determined to solve moving forward. And it doesn't seem like we take it that seriously. We argue about schools, and I think the argument is necessary. We argue about schools, but are we really solution oriented? Do we realize that if we argue about this for 2 or 3 years, we're going to lose a group of kids? We are going to lose a group of kids. That to me is the biggest fear I have. There is also talking about segregated schools. There is a list out, and I want to, the share of U.S. public schools with student bodies more than 90% non-white has jumped, and it's been climbing to over 19%, almost 20%. And do you remember desegregation? Is it detrimental to have segregated schools? There are people that are trying to figure out, how do we get away from doing these things? What is that doing to hurt the way we associate with other people? And I just look at this and I think we have got to focus on making sure our children have the tools. They'll figure the other stuff out. If we empower them with the skills to read, if they can read anything, then that means they're going to be able to figure out life's problems instead of us solving them for them. Instead of creating good citizens, let's create good readers. I think that's our job. All right, just after 10 o'clock every day, we do our ballot breakdown. President Biden has agreed to debates with former President Trump. We're going to talk about the dates, the implications, and what it all means coming up here in just a couple of moments.